the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Our first guest is a fashion designer whose famous name is synonymous with art through her father, Lucian Freud, and with psychoanalysis through her great-grandfather, Sigmund Freud. Her own fashion label has been hugely successful since she first established it in 1990, and her podcast, Fashion Neurosis, too. Her designs have been inspired by everyone from Jane Birkin to David Bowie and Vivienne Westwood. But it was her English-born Irish mother, Bernadine, who was schooled here, who perhaps had the greatest impact on her life. Bella Freud, you're very welcome to the programme. Can I ask you first, were you always interested in fashion, even?
Yeah, I was always interested in how clothes could make you feel less outsider, or somehow it could make sense of outsiderness, because my mum didn't look, you know, she didn't dress like other mums. She was very young and dressed like a hippie and was quite sort of unconventional. Now that's completely normal, but in the 60s you stood out so much if you weren't traditional accepted normality. So
if your mom was doing it successfully by stepping outside and being a bit different, that sort of set the tone for you about how you viewed clothes and what they could do.
It did, but it wasn't necessarily reassuring. I think I became quite obsessed with uniform and kind of strict things, even though I felt awkward and visible in a way I didn't necessarily want to be, but I also admired her and was proud of her. So it was kind of a complicated set of feelings that made clothes have extra loaded importance.
So you're kind of straight into the psychology of clothing there as the first thing that comes to mind, but we can talk a bit about that later. Your mom, you say that she was a little bit different. She had her own taste and a quirkiness and outsiderness about that. Tell us a bit about her. She was from Cork.
My grandmother, her mother was her family from Cork and Irish. And then her dad came over from South Africa. No one really knows where he was from. And he looked very kind of, he had black curly hair and green eyes and sort of a tan skin, and he was glamorous. And my Irish family is a big, I feel very kind of attached to that.
And you have relatives still in Cork?
Yes, my auntie Deirdre and her children and my auntie Paddy. Deirdre, I think she might even be 80, but she's so gorgeous and she's always been such a beauty. They all were, the three sisters, and still my auntie Deirdre is incredibly glamorous, and
she still has it.
Oh, she's got it. She's so cool.
And your mum met Lucian Freud when she was quite young. They were together. They never married, but they were together for a while. And Lucian painted your mum.
Yes. So he did a painting of her when she was pregnant with me, and then he did a painting of me when I was one or something. But there's a lovely painting of her sort of very close to giving birth, and that's a nice, is a wonderful kind of moment to sort of have of them being together, because they weren't together for that long.
Was he the love of her life, would you say?
Yes, I think he probably was.
And your mom, it's interesting because both of them, even though they were only together for a relatively short period of time, they both died within a few days of each other.
Yeah, it was a really strange thing that my father was ill and we were expecting him to die, and he was, you know, he was 88 or something like that. And then suddenly my mother went into hospital and they did some tests and said, you have a week to live. And she died a week later, and he died on the 20th of July and she died on the 24th. And it was a very, very strange thing that happened.
And had she been very strong, very well up until that point?
Completely. I mean, she'd been in a drum camp the weekend. She went into hospital on a Monday, and she'd been at. She loved. She was learning the, I think the Irish drum. You know that
The
one.
Baron.
Yeah. And she was always interested in music. She was a great dancer, so she'd been on this drum camp, and went for tests, and that was it. It was so fast, and in a way, she said that this young doctor had treated her and been very straightforward with her. And once he told her this information, she just completely accepted it. And I remember somebody came, I mean, she didn't have much time to be visited, but someone came to visit her and gave her this stone and said, "This is a stone to make you strong." And she just threw it across the room and said, "No, I know what's happening, and I'm going with it."
She was strong enough.
She was amazing. I remember, and she said to me, she said this thing, because we knew what was going to happen, I was able to say, "I'm really going to miss you." And she said, "I feel strangely detached from what's happening to me." And it was a very comforting thing to know that she was just kind of in this sort of in between stage, and she didn't seem at all scared.
Did she mention your dad in her last few days?
Yeah, she did. She said, "I'm sad that I won't be able to go to Dad's funeral." And then we both started laughing because it was so ironic, you know.
She sounds like an extraordinary woman, and her story was turned into a film starring Kate Winslet.
Yeah. My sister Esther wrote a book called Hideous Kinky, which was about our upbringing and travels in Morocco with Mom.
Even though your parents didn't stay together that long, afterwards they maintained a friendship.
Yeah, they became more friendly when they were much older. But they did, you know, my mum, she was very good about making sure that we saw our dad and developed a relationship with him and were very close to him, so.
And people, Bella, might make an assumption that as the daughter of Lucian Freud, such a huge name, a huge figure in art, and such a successful artist, that it would have been quite a well-off, well-heeled childhood or upbringing that you would have had. But it wasn't really like that.
No, our childhood, we didn't have much money at all. And my dad was, you know, he was a great dad, but he wasn't a reliable person in that way. And I think that was probably extremely hard for my mother.
And he was a lot older. He was 20 years older.
Yeah, 20 years older. Yeah, in theory, we should have had a kind of comfortable upbringing and home, but we didn't. But it sort of work for us, you know.
Was it very tough?
Yeah, sometimes it was very tough, you know, we never had anywhere to live of our own, and we were conscious that, you know, money was a big deal. But somehow or other, my mother was never that interested in money, and so she didn't act like it. She was very proud, and she never acted like she missed the things that money would bring.
Was your dad not in a position to financially help her out?
Oh yeah, he could have definitely done that, but
But he didn't.
he didn't, and he was, you know, he had his own sort of situation, and he wasn't wealthy or anything like that then, but he just managed his life in that way, and it was quite sort of merciless, I suppose. It was quite ruthless in a way, even though I don't think he intended it to be like that. And
Was that something you felt angry with him about?
no, I didn't, because I got a lot of other things from him. So, you know, you just kind of accept the way things are because that's how they are.
And your introduction to the fashion world, you worked with Vivienne Westwood. What was that like?
Oh, it was great. I mean, she taught me everything. She was really a mentor to me, and there was nobody like her. She was completely pioneering in so many ways. And
was she a tough taskmaster?
Yeah, she was, you know, and I'm glad she was. She didn't, you know, she was a very good teacher, and she was patient in some ways and exacting in others. She didn't do gratuitous kind of, compliments. If you got a compliment or some encouragement, you knew you were on track.
And what about Kate Moss? How did you end up meeting her? Because she modelled at one of your events.
Yes, I was showing in Fashion Week, and I think it was 1994, and then I got a call from her, from Storm Model Agency, saying, Kate said she'd walk in your show, and I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then that was the first time I met her, and she was just incredible, you know. It was so kind of, I mean, it was just meant so much to be selected. And she, you know, she didn't charge anything, and she just gave so much, and she was so wonderful. And that was when I first met her, and then we stayed friends since then.
And your dad, Lucien, painted her.
Yes, he did. She'd done an interview, which she didn't do many interviews, I think, and someone had said, what would you like to do that you haven't yet done? And she said, oh, well, that painter Lucien Freud, I wouldn't mind meeting him, but I think he's 80 or something. And he wasn't 80 then. And he said, oh, you know, I'm not 80 yet. And I said, well, do you want to meet her? She's a friend. She's a great friend. And so we organized lunch or dinner or something. And then she started sitting for him.
How would you say your father has influenced you creatively?
His main influence was when I used to sit for him a lot for paintings, and I would see how hard he worked and how he went through a kind of barrier of when something wasn't going well when he was working. He never gave up. He never said, let's stop. It was always at that moment that he pushed through, and you could feel him, you know, and watch him being, you know, in a state about how it wasn't working. And sometimes he would stab himself in the leg with a paintbrush, and he'd always make this very kind of sudden gesture when he did it, and it would make your blood drain from you.
That sounds pretty serious.
I mean, you could see how much this mattered. And, you know, when I started my brand, there's so many moments in any field, especially a creative field, that people think is all associated with inspiration. And inspiration is, you know, the nothing. It's about graft. And what I learned from him was, if things aren't going well, just go on and on and on until you can see what needs to be done.
Because he was famous for subjects asking them to sit 20, 40, even 50 times for a painting.
Yeah, a painting would take about a year, 9 months.
He wasn't in a hurry anyway.
Well, it was just how he worked. He worked slowly. And so if you signed up for it, you knew what you were in for.
It must have been a bit awkward at times sitting while someone would paint you. In your case, he was your father, but for others, for hours and hours and hours, 40 or 50 times. Was he chatty with people he was painting?
Oh, it was good, you know, because it was a very, like, if it was an evening painting, a night picture, you'd arrive just before the light went, have some tea, then go and work, and that most most sessions would last about 45 minutes. So you'd sit for 45 minutes, have a tea break, start again. Sometimes we'd zoom out for supper somewhere, and everything was quite fast but fun.
Very civilized.
It was really great, and he talked a lot when we were working, and he would, he had this incredible memory, and he would be able to recite whole poems, paid like the whole of the Mary Gloucester by Kipling, and funny things. And then I asked him a lot of questions about people I was interested in, like Jean Cocteau and Diaghilev and the Ballet Russe, and learnt lots of things about,
He had stories about them all.
yeah, he, you know, the people he'd met.
Did he mention his grandfather, Sigmund Freud, the father of psychoanalysis? Did he ever talk about him?
No, he never talked about him. I remember I asked him once, what he was like, and he said he was very funny. That was it, really. I
That's as
thought,
good as it gets. That's all you need.
I know, it was a very useful bit of info, and I like the idea of that too. So,
Do you think to some extent, and I'm thinking back to what you said earlier about what clothes can do for a person or what they did for you, is there a bit of psychology of clothing that has seeped into your own thinking about it and your own inspiration?
Well, I suppose it has. I've always felt that clothes did a job that was bigger than their, the sum total of them. That if you could get your look right, you could have a lot of freedom. You could be freed from self-consciousness. And then you could be more intelligent, more witty, or, have your wits about you. Whereas if your outfit's kind of off, you can't stop thinking about it. It's a big attention drain. And I just was so aware when I was a child that certain clothes made you have, it gave you an entrance into whether it was school or kind of friendship groups, and I became quite sort of fixated on things that people wore and how, especially in my upbringing and those times, and the school I went to where fashion was just considered to be the most contemptible interest. It was really looked down upon, and there was quite a lot of shame around having an interest in clothes. So I was negotiating that too, and then there were a few girls at school who didn't have any of this kind of torment about liking nice things, and it was normal to have nice things, whereas that wasn't my experience at all. So clothes became a very powerful symbol.
Do you think the Freud name has been a blessing or at times a burden?
Well, I think what really matters is what you do, the quality of your work. So, to have any name or anything that attracts people's attention is useful in such a competitive world. But if you're bad at your job, then it's an embarrassment to be trading off something.
So it helps to get you in the door, but after that, you're on your own.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So what about the podcast? In a way, you've drawn on some of that with the podcast name, Fashion Neurosis.
Yeah.
And you have your guests lying out on the couch as you interview them.
I thought, what? I'm just going to do it. It's a bit of a piss take, obviously, but then I enjoy those kind of conversations.
It's a bit of fun. And you film it as well. So the guests are actually stretched out thinking about the questions, but they're looking into a camera. Does it make them tell more of the truth or just give the impression they're telling the truth because they're looking straight into a camera?
Well, who knows? I suppose that's that kind of you can
That's for the viewers to decide.
exactly. I mean, it seems to do something. There's something very peaceful, and if there's something that kind of takes a catch off, I think, just being like that, and then the aesthetics of, you know, looking down into someone's eyes as they're thinking about what they're saying, that's something I really wanted. I wanted the viewer to have this feeling of intimacy and connection.
The fashion industry is a tough business. Sometimes outwardly it gives the impression of being full of kind of lovies who tell each other they're all amazing every day, and they're so excited as if they haven't seen each other in a year and they only met yesterday type thing. But is that something that you try to tackle? Is the toughness of the business something you want to get across in the podcast?
Not exactly that, but what I feel isn't known is how hard people do work in the fashion business, and what people see is a result of unbelievable attention and hard work and thoughtfulness. And I mean, the things that go wrong are just, I mean, there are so many problems always to try to make this impossible thing happen. You know, the fabric never arrives or gets stuck in customs, or so many problems. But then the thing I feel that's not really sort of shown is fashion is always shown as extremely competitive and facile. And actually there are these amazing friendships and, you know, loyalties and people really looking out for each other, and as well as all the, you know, the fun bitchy stuff, which is very entertaining.
You've enjoyed a lot of success in both fashion and design, and with the podcast now as well. When you reflect back on your own upbringing, and you said that at times it was tough, and you were living with your mom in Morocco for a few years as well, which I'm sure wasn't easy particularly, has that influenced how you view success, how you view money, for example? Are you fairly frugal as a result of it, do you think, Bella?
Oh, God, I'd love to be a bit more. I mean,
a bit more frugal or a bit more flash?
Well, both, really. I mean, I can live on nothing. I can make something out of very little, and I can also spend like water. You know, I don't have much in between. So if I kind of didn't have anything, I would know how to get by. I have had that experience. And then, you know, when I do have money, I just love to spend it as fast as possible.
Go all in.
Yeah.
Along the way, Bella, you would have met and worked with so many famous people, and we've talked about some of them. Marianne Faithfull, who died during the week, you knew her?
Yes, I knew her. I met her when I was a teenager, actually, and that was a real shock, and typical Marianne to just go, you know, no goodbye, no build-up, no nothing, you know. But yeah, she had a big influence on my generation and so many people, and I did know her, and she was a mixture of completely wonderful, dazzling, charming and hilarious and so impossible. She was fantastic.
Brilliantly impossible.
Yeah.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Bella Freud, a fashion designer and the woman behind the podcast Fashion Neurosis, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you very much for having me.